Did you know that 22% of consumers think the majority of websites are harder to use than they should be? And 80% of people think fewer than 75% of websites offer clear explanations of what they're for and how to use them properly?
I mean, Lily, that's a lot of numbers, and it sounds like you're trying to blame me for all of those. I mean, I know I've worked on a lot of things, but not nearly that many sites.
But doesn't it just make you feel a little bit responsible for some people having a bad day, though?
You can't pin this all on me. I mean, I always try to make it better, but I can't deny that in some companies it did feel like a losing battle.
Okay, well, it's a good thing we talked to Rachel Obstler, EVP at Heap, about how we can use data in a better way to understand how our customers use our sites and tackle the challenges that they're facing.
Ooh, that sounds like it could be really useful. Let's get right to it.
The Product Experience is brought to you by Mind the Product.
Every week, we talk to the best product people from around the globe about how we can improve our practice and build products that people love.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and to discover an extensive library of great content and videos.
Browse for free or become a Mind the Product member to unlock premium articles, unseen videos, AMAs, roundtables, discounts to our conferences around the world, training opportunities, and more.
Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities, and there's probably one near you. Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for joining us on the Product Experience. It's really lovely to be talking to you today.
Oh, yeah, it's great to be here. I'm very excited.
And our topic today is all around kind of usability and analytics. But before we get started, it would be great to have a quick intro into your background and what you're doing today.
Sure. So first, yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Rachel Obstler. I am currently the EVP of product at Heap Analytics. And I have been in various product roles through most of my career. So I've had a very small stint in consulting, done a little bit of product marketing, a little bit of general management, but largely I've worked in product management for over 20 years because I love it.
And did you know, so presumably when you started at Heap, you kind of knew lots about the struggles that product managers have with analytics or the joy of some of the data that you can get from analytics in order to improve your products. But how did you feel about analytics before you started at Heap?
I've always been very interested in data. In fact, like some of the organizations I've worked with in the past have been products that were data products, I guess you could say. And yes, I was very intrigued by the idea of being able to have access to all the data you need when you need it in an easier way. And I've also been always very interested in both combining like data and also the more soft skills that you often need as a product manager. So yes, I was really interested in Heap and the idea of making analytics a lot more easy to get and accessible for a broader set of product and not just product management, also product marketing, customer success, product analytics professionals, just everyone.
It's such a fundamental piece to the puzzle that is product management, isn't it?
It is. And I think there's a real role that analytics can play around aligning teams. So I think I think of what happens when you're a product manager and you find a piece of insight, right? Like, what do? Well, you don't just stop there. You share it, right? Like you share it with your team. You want them to know that answer, that piece of information. And so I just think there's a big role for analytics to play in helping align teams as well as making the right decisions.
And your business, Heap, undertook a study in which it was said that more than a third of consumers would rather get stuck in rush hour traffic than use a bad website, which I thought was kind of hilarious and also kind of awful at the same time. So why do you think we get so agitated with, you know, bad usability websites?
Yeah, that was my favorite question in the survey. I think it's primarily because, well, number one, people are busy, but number two, they know right now, they know what good looks like. And so if you've seen it working, and everyone's gone onto the Amazon website, regardless of what you think of Amazon, and they really just push the boundaries of like speed and ease of use. I mean, the one-click purchase is just like a great innovation. And so when you start getting used to that type of performance, when you don't have it in the other applications that you use, it's just really noticeable. So I think it's just that expectations are being set and constantly exceeded, and everyone then raises their expectations.
So if we know what good looks like, why are there still so many crap sites out there?
That is such a good question. There are many reasons for that. You know, so, you know, we were talking a bit about data before. It may just be that certain groups don't have the access to the data that they need. We talk to a lot of companies, you know, prospects, customers, and, you know, a high percentage of them are pretty mature when it comes to using data to drive decisions. But there's just as many of them that are very early on. And they're really largely making decisions based on gut instinct. Maybe it's a combination of gut instinct and talking to customers. But the fact is, like, some of these user journeys, these user experiences that you have to perfect, you're not going to get the type of insight just from talking to people. Like, it's hard for people sometimes to articulate why they didn't buy something or why they got stuck somewhere, right? You really need a combination of anecdotal and the data to guide you through. So I think that's part of it, is maybe not having the data, or sometimes it's just cultural, that the organization is used to making gut decisions. And in order to change a culture like that, you really need to do it both bottoms up and top down. Like, you need to have people who are doing things in a different way, and you need the leadership to be encouraging people and rewarding people for using data to make decisions as opposed to just gut decisions.
So that's, Rachel, that sounds really interesting. You know, I may or may not have worked on projects in the past where the incentive structure for the company versus the incentives for the customer may not have been aligned. We might have done things like force people to sign up for an account before we let them actually do anything. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with things like that? How do you change the culture in a company where you've got a good feeling that, you know, you're not serving the customer's best interests?
That is a really good question. And of course, we've been talking about data. Data plays a huge, if not the predominant role in doing that. The best way to show that you should be doing something different is to try it and see what happens. And there's a lot of ways to do that so that you're not completely shutting off the way things work today. You can do it with a small sample set. You can run an experiment for a small period of time, so it has a minimal impact on the business, but it gets you the data you need to make the business case that, you know, for instance, in your case, allowing people to try out some stuff before making them create an account is going to lead to better results over time. I think of an analogous or similar, maybe a similar example, which is, I think that marketing teams have really been trained to gather as much intel and information up front as they can before letting people try something, because that's what tells you which of those people you should forward to sales, which of those people are going to be good leads. You know, in a world of digital and product-led growth, the most important piece of information is what people are doing in your product, right? That's the thing that really tells you what offers you should give them, whether or not they're going to make a good customer, whether or not there's a good fit there. And that's much better information than anything you know about where they live or what demographics they are in general. And so it's really just a mindset shift. And the best way to make that shift is through, I think, experimentation and proving it.
And a lot of analytics tools these days, or maybe not all, you know, a lot of them, but some of them capture the actual end-to-end journey, like the recording of the full session. And we're kind of trained as product managers to really think about the ethics behind capturing data of our users. And this to me feels like almost like another sort of step down that route of like, you know, should we be actually capturing all of this information? And what's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's important to make sure that you are following whatever rules and guidelines that your company has around identity management. And so as long as you're protecting the identity of the user, and whether you're doing it with a key or some other way, but like you have a concept of who that user is just because you can follow the whole journey, like you know where they started and where they stopped, this was the same person, you don't need to know who they are. And the other thing is a lot of times, like you do want to look at individual user journey because again, you want to just see like what exactly is happening where people get stuck, but it's not about that one user, right? It's about, there's a whole set of users that are getting stuck at this particular point, and therefore you want to understand what's happening there, right? So I think it just comes down to making sure that you're being responsible with identity, but then looking at things in aggregate. And if you do look at things on an individual user basis, you're doing it as an example of something that is happening at an aggregate, and you're protecting the identity.
And I think one of the other really fascinating stats from the study that that you did was that I think it was 43% of consumers think that the user experience wasn't designed around their needs, but 95% of product teams say that it's very easy to navigate their sites. So there's like a huge disconnect there. How does that happen? How does that disconnect happen? And as product managers listening to this, like, where can we understand, you know, where can we find the 43% of people who are using our site and help them better?
Yeah. We all intend as product people to build amazing user journeys, right? We all intend to put out the perfect thing that works from the beginning. And the reason why there's that disconnect is because it's hard. It's hard to do that. What digital transformation is about is creating net new customer journeys or user journeys, right? You're either digitizing something that could in the past only have been done in person. Maybe you're creating new experiences that could never have happened before. And so when you're creating things that are new, you are by definition doing something no one's done before. And it's hard to make it perfect to begin with. And so what is really key is then having the information that you need so that you know where people are getting stuck, you know where the friction is. And that is also actually not the easiest thing to do in the world. So that's why it's so important to not be caught up with what you think the happy path is, right? I've designed this. Here's the journey. These are the steps that users must take. And I will measure whether they take them, because the reality is that users don't do what you expect them to do. They find every which way to accomplish something that you have not expected. And so knowing what they're doing, maybe they found a better way to do something. Maybe they're getting stuck in a place that you just didn't anticipate. This is all really what product management is about today, especially with digital products. Is how do you make sure that you make that user journey as seamless as possible, as understandable as possible, and that you don't assume, again, back to that gut thing, you don't assume you know why people are completing something or not, but you look at the data to figure out where things are going wrong.
Okay, so that's the tricky part, right? Because there's potentially an awful lot of data available, and you start harvesting it and making it available to people, and they all want to look at it from their own perspective. So how do we get set up? How do we make sure that we're actually instrumenting the right things and looking at the data in a way that's useful rather than just from the perspective of, say, my bonusable measure or my KPI?
So I would say that you don't, right? That if you're starting from the point of view of a bunch of assumptions that you need to make about the data that you need to have, then you might have already missed something. You probably did, right? So start from the point of view, if at all possible, of collecting everything. Just collect it all and let the data tell you what's happening. And, you know, there's a lot of places where you do have to make some assumptions, like, okay, I want to understand the user journey from this point to this point, right? So you have to make some assumptions, but don't make assumptions of what are the important points in there or that you know every step that you think is important. You know, one thing that we've done with the Heap product is we released a feature called effort analysis, and our customers have just been loving it. And the reason why is what it does is you start out with a user journey. So you've got a path and you create these milestones that you think are the milestones. And what it does is it tells you how much effort and time the users are actually spending in each of those sections, each of those milestones. And it's amazing how insightful that is just to see there's actually 50, on average, 50 interactions happening in this milestone to get to the next one. And there's a huge drop off and people are spending, you know, 3 to 5 minutes on this. And they're often leaving the site and coming back to complete it, right? There's a lot you can learn about just capturing all the data and seeing what level of effort is actually happening on a site. And then you can start diving in and you can start coming up with hypotheses, like, why are people doing all these things? You can look at a replay of the users that are going through this and getting stuck here and see exactly where they're getting stuck. But you got to start with all the data to then tell you where you should be diving in.
Sprig, formerly UserLeap, is an all-in-one product research platform that lets you ask bite-sized questions to your customers within your product or existing user journeys.
Companies like Dropbox, Square, Opendoor, Loom, and Shift all use Sprig's video interviews, concept tests, and micro surveys to understand their customers at the pace of modern software development so they can build customer-centric products that deliver a sustainable competitive advantage.
So if you're part of an agile product team that wants to obtain rich insights from users at the pace you ship products, then give Sprig a try for free by visiting sprig.com. Again, that's Sprig, Sprig.com. So how does that fit in with, it feels like it goes very much against the kind of common trend now of just have your North Star metric and, you know, hang everything off of that and focus on your one thing that's the thing that matters to the most to the business or to the user or whatever. It feels like a very different approach to that. So what's your view of North Star metrics?
Yeah, so that's not necessarily inconsistent, but let me explain. Let's say you have a North Star metric, and your North Star metric is, I'm trying to remember what Facebook's was, but it was like 10 friends set up in the first week or 2 weeks or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a North Star metric. And you can measure with the North Star metric, you know, how many of our users are getting there, right? How many of them are completing this? How many are completing it longer, shorter? But do you know why? Like the ones that are not getting there, why are they not getting there? Are they getting stuck somewhere in the site? Like, is there some friction that we don't know about? And so that's where you have to really dive in. And so so I think it's two very different things. One is like, what is the metric that we want to look at to figure out, like, do we think our business is moving in the right direction? The other one is, what sort of user journeys do we have, and is there friction inherent in them, and how do we reduce that friction? So it's like, once you find out maybe your North Star metric isn't going in the right direction, what's actionable, right? Mm-hmm. And how do you figure out what to do to fix it? I think you also kind of asked the question about North Star metrics in general. And I think they're really interesting. They're tough if you're not really sure what it should be, yeah. Right? So I think that's the hardest thing about them, is that there's plenty of great examples of companies that picked really good North Star metrics. And then there's plenty where they didn't necessarily. And I'll tell you, like, from Heap's point of view, we kind of have a North Star metric, like it has to do with monthly querying users, but I'm not convinced that we've gotten to the point where I would elevate it to the North Star metric, right? I think that we're still early and there's a number of different metrics that we're looking at, and we're still kind of figuring out what we want that North Star metric to be. So I think they can be really great, but the trick is picking one that really is the right thing to drive your business.
For the companies that you see getting value out of the way they do analytics, is there something in common? Is there, a North Star for getting your analytics up and running well?
That's a good question. There are a number of things that are important, I would say. And I always get back to, I forget who coined this idea, but like people, process, technology. As in, if you try to solve the problem just with technology, you might fail. If you try to solve it just with org structure, culture, people, like that type of thing, you might also fail because you don't have the tooling you need. And if you try to just solve it with process and you don't have either the other two, it's also a problem, right? So I think the companies that do this well approach the problem in a holistic way. Right. So they're thinking about what's the right tool to get the data and the analysis and capabilities I need. And I should say it's not just one tool, it's often a tool chain, right? So, you know, you want to make sure that your analytics is connected to, say, your product, but also what you're doing around maybe in-app messaging or email sending, right? You want to have, I think Lily, you mentioned this earlier, but this view across the entire customer journey. The customer journey doesn't just include when you're on someone's website. It also includes what emails you're sending them, if you're popping up messages in-app. So it's thinking about the technology. It's also thinking about the process. How often do you want people to review data? Are you expecting teams to show data when they're talking about a new development that they want to do or a project? Or are you making sure that there's a good process around evaluating after you've launched something, whether or not it worked or didn't work? So there's a whole practice around the data. And then lastly, there's a culture, right? So if someone is making decisions based on gut, is someone checking that? Like, where is the data to back this up? Are people being rewarded for trying experiments, even if they fail? Because at least they're trying an experiment as opposed to just doing something, you know, without any basis for whether they should do it or not. So it gets back to the companies that do it well, I think, take a more holistic approach and make sure that they have the right culture, the right staffing, the right tooling, and the right processes.
And you kind of mentioned there about companies that do this well. So is it just, those things that you've discovered that sets them apart, that makes them do it well? Or is there some other kind of secret sauce that they have? Do they have like a data guru on their team, or just like a particular way of approaching it that really, makes them good at this type of analysis?
Yeah, you know, one thing I've noticed, and we do the same thing at Heap, is that, and I think Randy alluded to this before, like data is not easy, right? It's, and I've worked with a lot of product managers that are very good at it, but it's still, that's not their job, their sole job, right? To really understand data, to do correlations, like to really figure out what's driving things, to figure out what's what's the best metric to correlate to our business outputs. It can be really hard stuff to do, to get predictive about things. So the companies that do this well, they get in the right expertise to do the more complex things. And so that could include a data science team, that could include just people who are focused on product analytics, making sure that the tooling is in place, that you have the right tech stack for it. And one comes to mind, and it's, I think a lot about product-led growth, you know, the idea that nowadays, really the customer is in the driver's seat or the prospect. They want to be able to come to your website. They want to be able to figure out what you do. They want to be able to try it for themselves and see if they get value. Not everyone does. Some still want to talk to sales, but many people want to operate that way. And a company that has really capitalized on that and done it well is Atlassian, right? So they spend a lot of time hiring data scientists. Those data scientists are really focused on growth, on how to make sure that they understand what users are doing. They understand what new capabilities they should be offered. They know when to offer those things. They know how to make the process very smooth. And there are many companies doing this, but if you look at companies that have been really successful in the last couple of years, they've really capitalized on this idea of self-service and making it easy for people to try what they want to try. And in that case, as with other product capabilities as well, having data scientists and product analysts that can really focus on that and help the product team is really important.
Is this one of those places where we can make the mistake of trying to make it smooth or easy for everyone instead of trying to optimize for the best segments? Because, you know, that might actually be making it harder for some people, but they may not be good customers. Is that the type of thing these working with data scientists can help us with?
Potentially so. I mean, data scientists can help with a lot. You know, they could help with, again, like correlation to different business metrics that you care about. They can help with figuring out like, hey, what is the optimal path through what's happening here? But I think that that what you're mentioning there also comes down to just in general, like a business strategy and a prioritization call. So you can look at the data there, but you also have to think about where you're going as a company. What segments are you going to focus on? Sometimes it's a focus issue, right? Like sometimes you can't prioritize every single segment that's out there and you have to make some choices. So it is a very good question, which is, should you focus or should you be more broad? And I would say it's almost an impossible one to answer in general. It depends on your specific situation. I don't know. Think you have a better answer for that one? I don't think I have a better answer for that one. That's a tough one.
And just thinking about those poor people who find that they're experiencing the equivalent pain of being stuck in rush hour traffic as when they're using a bad website. How do we go about using quant data to understand where people are experiencing usability issues?
Yeah. So one place to start is to just see where users are getting stuck or falling off, right? So let's say you have a user journey in mind, you have a start point and an end point, and just knowing, first of all, what percent of users are dropping off, then finding exactly where they're dropping off, right? So that's where having all the data is helpful, because it's possible that there is one field in one form that is one part of your process that is the thing that is causing a lot of friction. And being able to have a data set that identifies that for you and will even surface it automatically is hugely helpful, saves a lot of time, may get you to answers you would not have gotten to otherwise, but at the very least will get you to the answer way faster than you would have otherwise. So that gets back to that idea of having all the data, but also this idea of, you know, if it's obvious where users are falling off, the system could even just say, here's where it is, like right here. You know, there's other ways to get at that data. You can always just blindly try a bunch of experiments. But if you know exactly where it is, it's much easier to make a change that is going to have a real big impact. And that's for instance, that's what a lot of our customers say that, that Heap helps them with is the idea that they can just have an impact a lot faster because it's much more precise about where the issue is.
Okay, so for those listening who are dying to get back to work, or maybe they're at work, but they're just having a coffee break and listening and get stuck into their data, what are your kind of top tips for product people working on analytics? What are the kind of the advice that you find yourself always giving to product managers?
On analytics, let's see. So first of all, I would say, let's say you are a product manager that is new in a company or working on a new product. I would definitely say first start by just understanding, like doing a baseline of performance of the product, right? So, and figuring out what those metrics are that tell you what that baseline is. Right. And there's a lot of standard ones. They don't always work 100% across every single product. So you have to think about what makes sense for your product. But standard ones are things like, you know, daily active users or monthly active users. As you know, I mentioned MQUs earlier for Heap. So we do something slightly different. It's not a monthly active user. We call it a monthly querying user, like someone that got some insight out of Heap. So you know, we ourselves have adjusted a bit based on what the product does and what makes sense. But looking at, you know, feature usage of the area that you are in, you know, there's a set of baseline metrics that you can put together and it starts to give you a picture of just like, where are you starting? Right. And then beyond that, it's thinking about, and we talked a bit earlier about North Star metrics. I don't think you have to decide on the very one North Star metric. That's a lot of pressure. But Start figuring out what your main KPIs are. Like, what are the main things that you want to drive? And it's okay for there to be a couple of them. Like, try to limit it to five. Five's a lot. Three is better. But maybe those are things like, you know, and they should align very closely to the goals you have for the product. So if you're trying to drive more usage of a certain feature, then that can be a KPI. If you're trying to drive more, again, like monthly or daily active users in the product, that can be a KPI. But it's something that you think that you as a product manager, number one, it's important to the business. And then number two, you can drive it. You can see a line of sight to the things and the changes you can make. And that, like, I'll give a really good example, which is that we have a team that focuses on integrations at Heap and integrations with other tools. It could be tools sending in like other types of data into Heap that we want to have in the system. It could be tools that we're sending data out to because we want them to take some sort of action, like send someone an email. And one of the things that we really wanted to do is make sure that more of our users who signed up for an integration deployed it successfully. And so we saw some drop off there. And so one of the main metrics that the team, the KPI that this team was focused on was, you know, within a week, were people or customers who signed up for something actually deploying it and using it successfully. And just having that focus and making a couple changes in the ease of use of setup move that metric like about 10% in a quarter.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just a great example of having something that is measurable, that you can have an impact on, and that is important to the business. And once you kind of have those things set up, then you can start thinking about something like, is there a North Star metric that we care about? Mm. But I think just starting by baselining performance and then coming up with the key, shouldn't call them key KPIs, I do that all the time. KPIs that you think are important, even just for that quarter, is a really good start.
Rachel, is there a way of balancing leading and lagging measures that you need to worry about when you're doing this? Because I've seen people focus way too much on lagging in the past, and I'm just curious how you deal with that.
Yeah, that is such a good question. And it is one of the banes of my existence is lagging metrics, because, you know, they lag and they're really hard to figure out if you're moving them in a timely fashion. And so what I would say, sometimes you end up with lagging metrics. And the reason why you end up with lagging metrics as a product team is because they are important business metrics, right? So my favorite one to be like a pet peeve is NPS. NPS is a very lagging metric, but it's kind of an accepted metric to understand, you know, how well a product is liked and usable across the industry. So it's kind of hard to not use it and not report on it. So when you have a lagging metric, it is really important to then figure out what are your leading metrics that are going to tell you whether or not you're heading in the right direction so that you should see that lagging metric moving in a period of time. So I think what you said, Randy, about balancing it is really important. Like anytime you have a lagging metric, you got to figure out what your leading metric or metrics are going to be and focus on moving those.
Rachel, we are way out of time, but it's been so awesome talking to you about this topic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Lily and Randy. I really enjoyed this. Happy to do it again anytime.
So, Randy, now you know, and there is no excuse for being the cause of someone's frustration.
If only it were that simple. I'm not sure all of life's challenges can be solved by product analytics. But, you know, that's why we all love our jobs, right? We got into this because we love a challenge.
Exactly. And that's why you and I are here, to help where we can. So if you like this and you want to hear more, subscribe and like.
Yay!
Our hosts are me, Lily Smith, and
me, Randy Silver.
Emily Tate is our producer, and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arne Kittler, who runs Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. Connect with your local product community via Product Tank, our regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, you can consider starting one yourself. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.
Product Tank is a global community of meetups driven by and for product people. We offer expert talks, group discussion, and a safe environment for product people to come together and share learnings and tips.